The path is a symbol representing the fact that we can change. The path itself is not out there. It is in here. The path simply represents the individual solution to your own particular predicament. If you know and understand yourself as you are now, that puts you in a position to develop in your own way. The path is you in the process of organizing your mental states in such a way that growth and development will take place in a positive direction. It sounds quite simple, doesn't it? We just have to organize our mental states in a particular way. And then, I suppose I must have written this about a year ago. Many of us begin our journey as spiritual practitioners with all sorts of ideas about what we might achieve and how we should go about doing it. But as our practice deepens, we find that simply doing as we're told isn't enough, even as ideas about the goal and how we might reach it become less clear. We begin to understand that in order to realize the Dharma, we are going to have to find creative and personally meaningful ways to work through our unique set of habits in the service of ever deepening freedom from suffering. This will be different for each of us, but there is something that unites us on our journeys. Those are the principles we practice by. These principles help us in understanding what is unfolding, how to meet that unfolding with curiosity and love, and how to turn toward that meeting, and how to turn that meeting into the means for awakening. These principles have been clearly communicated to us by our teacher through the 5 stages of our system of practice: integration, positive emotion, receptivity, spiritual death, and spiritual rebirth. So Suzuki Roshi said this really beautiful thing. Suzuki Roshi said lots of beautiful things, but this one in particular I thought might help us get into the material. So he said, each of you is perfect the way you are. Each of you is perfect the way you are. And you can use a little improvement. In Vision and Transformation, Sangha actually goes into this in a very beautiful way, very clear way. So we've got the ideal, don't we? We have kind of the, someone said, was it you, Lisa? You're here to get enlightened. That's pretty clear, whatever that means. So we've got this, what Bhante calls perfect vision of both the way things are, this magical mystery tour of reality that from the deluded point of view can be incredibly painful, so we suffer. We're in this kind of, we're in this predicament, aren't we? Bhante used that word, predicament. And it's totally ours. So your suffering is your suffering. It's all the conditions of your life coming into, manifesting into whatever that moment of suffering is. That's all yours. So we have samsara. And then somehow, something in us mysteriously intuits that there must be some other way. There must be something else. It can't just be this, can it? It can't just be this messy, effed up situation. That would be tragic and devastating. So there's got to be something else, right? Harvey Milk, the mayor of San Francisco, who was the first gay mayor ever in the States who got assassinated. If you watch the film Milk, there's this fantastic scene where he says, you got to give him hope. You got to give him hope. And I think that's what kind of the Buddha was like. You got to give him hope. So without some sense of something else, we wouldn't be here. None of us would be here. And we've had some experience in our lives that sparked that for us, whatever that, a bereavement, a seeing clearly in a moment of deep suffering, maybe just actually as a young child, some experience, like, you know, we've got these amazing stories of the Buddha, like, sitting under the apple tree, the rose apple tree, you know, just flashing into dhyanic experience. So there's something that's been kind of shimmering for us, and we're sort of following that. We're following our nose. And somehow we've ended up in this context together. So we're here. So we've got these two truths. We've got samsara, we've got nirvana. You know, what different language will work for you differently. So maybe you like the idea of conditioned existence versus the unconditioned, relative truth and absolute truth. So from an absolute point of view, we're perfect, and relatively, we could use some improvement. We've got the developmental model, and some of you might be more familiar with immanence models where, you know, it's like, oh, we're already awake, so we just can just rest in that. And over time, we'll just become more... But that will be reveal itself more and more in us. So, at least at this stage in my own practice, what I'm curious about and interested in and exploring is how do we bring the ideals, the intentions that we have, whatever that intention might be, being a better person, being more loving, being more wise, being less stressed out, having more perspective, being less self-centered. Whatever your version of that is, we have the intention, we have the ideal. And then we have what's actually happening right now. What's actually happening right now might be that you're racked with anger or doubt or frustration, or there's flashes where none of that's present, and then somehow that shuts down and you're back in whatever your thing is. So that's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to bring those two things together and stay in the tension of that meeting. So being clear just now about why we're here, and we started that a bit last night, you know, there's just a really simple question, why are you here? Which might just be, it was the retreat that fit my schedule. Or maybe you're more in touch with, I want to get enlightened. And this, I'm convinced that this retreat is going to help me get in line, so I'm here to make that progress. So integration, in a way, is about getting more and more clear, or maybe it's not even about getting more and more clear. Maybe it's about opening more and more, bringing more and more into awareness and consciousness what it is that we're actually setting out to do, what is our intention, and getting really clear about that. Sampajana, continuity of purpose, coming back to that over and over again. And maybe it changes, maybe it, it will change. It has to change. But can we get clear about what that is for us right now and really have confidence in that?
Sorry to interrupt, is it possible to have a window open?
Yeah, please, open the window. Yeah. Yeah, so please just do whatever you need to do to take care of yourself. So if you need to lay down, if you need to stand up, if you need to open a window, yeah, just please make yourself as comfortable as you can. And then, you know, we've got so much in the scriptures to help us also to remind us of what is it that we are heading towards. So I thought I would just share a few things that are I'm finding personally inspiring at the moment. You might have your own versions, so I would encourage you to go and look for what you might find inspiring. So descriptions of both what an awake being is like and also what that space of awakening is like. So this is from the Majjhima Agama Sutta. Come, all of you, and undertake yourselves such a path, such a track, that having undertaken this path, having undertaken this track, you will eradicate all the influxes and attain the influx-free liberation of the mind and liberation by wisdom, and will dwell knowing by yourselves, awakening by yourselves, realizing by yourselves. Birth has come to an end. The holy life has been established. What had to be done has been done. There will be no more experiencing of existence, knowing it as it really is. What had to be done has been done. I love that. You can kind of see the Buddha being like, what had to be done? It's done. It's like, I had to do it, so I did it. And it can feel like that in a way. I often get a sense like I'm not choosing to walk this path. It's just what has to be done. And then in the Purabeda Sutta, the Buddha's asked to describe the qualities of a sage, an awakened one. So this is a little bit of what he says. It's not the whole thing. A person who is calmed, who has extinguished all cravings before the time the body disintegrates into nothing, who has no concern with how things began or with how they will end, and no fixation with what happens in between. Such a person has no preferences. There is no anger, no fear, and no pride. Nothing disturbs their composure, and nothing gives them cause for regret. Because they understand the way things are, they are free from dependence, and there is nothing they rely on. For them, there is no more craving to exist or not to exist. This is what I call a person who is calmed. It is a person who does not seek after pleasure, who has nothing to tie them down, who has gone beyond the pull of attachment. It is a person with nothing in them that they grasp at as theirs, and nothing in them that they reject as not theirs. The Buddha often talks in terms of what it isn't. Interesting. And then just a few, this is like a laundry list of the different ways in which the Buddha described nirvana, which Vishvapani has quite generously compiled for us in his book, Gautama Buddha. He called it the harbor of refuge, the cool cave, the island amidst the floods, a place of bliss, emancipation, liberation, safety, the transcendental, the uncreated, the tranquil, the home of ease. the calm, the end of suffering, the medicine for all evil, the unshaken, this one's my favorite, ambrosia, the immaterial, the imperishable, the abiding, the further shore, the unending, the bliss of effort, the supreme joy, the ineffable, detachment. Actually, remembering one that I don't think is in that list, which is the deathless. So that's the view. And then there's what's happening now. And I can't stress more how important it is that we welcome everything, every part of us, the whole of us. And we'll do a bit more about that later, but I thought I would share. Some of you who are on retreat with us here last summer, Radical Embrace, will have seen that me quoting from this book, Radical Dharma, written by a few friends of mine in the States who I met on a Generation X Dharma Teachers Conference. And they're very concerned with the state of the world and how the Dharma can help liberation on all different levels. So he's talking about radical presence, which is very similar in concept to the idea of the radical embrace, if you're familiar with the content of that retreat. So it's all along the same lines of welcoming everything and embracing everything. So this is Lama Rod Owens. Radical presence is the practice of authenticity, which is the practice of staying true to one's self. It implies that what we say or do is in accord with our truest desires and aspirations. In my experience, authenticity is about embracing my unique personality as it manifests in the world. It is about recognizing that my experience has been shaped and will continue to be shaped by the communities that I have been raised in. Authenticity is the conscious choice to be true to my own experience and the struggle of being attentive and patient with how my experience has been shaped through factors both in and out of my control. It is not an easy practice. It requires a certain level of confidence and trust in my experience as something that is valuable and meaningful, which is something that is particularly important for people who come from marginalized communities. And as women on a women's retreat, I think sometimes we can forget that we are marginalized and that that is part of our conditioning. So how can we work creatively with that? How can we keep showing up to that reality for ourselves and also the strength that's born of that reality? So I've said a lot now. Any questions before we do a bit of practice about anything I've said? Is it clear?
What do you mean by women forgetting that we are marginalized?
Yeah. Well, we're in a space where we're on retreat, we're away from the world in a particular way. I mean, obviously we can't completely draw a boundary there. So I think sometimes we can forget that it's not actually, the world is sometimes not a safe place for us. For myself, sometimes in the presence of men, I'm actually not as clear and articulate as I am when I'm just with women. Why is that? It's my conditioning. I've been conditioned to fear the disapproval of men. And that I hold back because of that. I'm not taking full responsibility for that. It's a co-created situation. And I am actually in an active process at the moment of trying to bring myself in more around that as effectively as I can. But I can forget that when I'm just in all women's spaces, because that dynamic isn't necessarily playing out. Does that help?
Yeah.
Other questions?
One question, actually. So you said integration, something interesting, I think. So I usually think of integration as kind of accepting everything and bringing everything in. But you said it's also about, or maybe particularly about, focusing on the goal, on what it is. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it's also there. It's also part of us, that desire to wake up.
A good point, yeah.
Yeah, we've got this negativity bias built in. It's a biological thing. So we just so easily focus on all the kind of crap. But we can forget, like, oh, actually, there's parts of me that are actually quite awake sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a reason we're here, and we can celebrate that. Okay, let's set ourselves up to do some practice.